Yes, it's that time of the week again. Good afternoon, Dr. David Tabbert and Cheryl Shaw.
G'day, Amanda.
Hello.
Hello, Cheryl.
Yes, it's nice to be here today.
Now, I've been looking at your pin, mm-hmm. and at first I thought it was a weird-looking watermelon with a hat on, but it's a bulldog.
It is.
We won't say what I said.
No, we won't say what you said, David.
But it is.
It is
to be fair, it's a bulldog.
Yes.
It's just
wonderful.
Hard to see from a distance, that's all.
Okay. So we're not talking about bulldogs per se.
No.
We are going to be talking about what's on that bulldog's face. And there's lots and lots of wrinkles and folds and
yeast
and
bacteria.
Yuckies. So we're going to be talking about what to do to make sure we keep that area nice and clean.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got an interesting call from Paula from Wall's End. Hi, Paula.
Hello, how are you today?
Great, thank you. You want to know, do pets dream?
Well, yes, I have actually witnessed what I think is a pet having a dream. I'll explain. We are grandparents, my husband and I are grandparents to a blue heeler cattle dog.
Excellent.
His name is Gus.
Yes.
Very healthy fellow. And he's well looked after. And, of course, we just think he's wonderful. He actually goes to sleep around the 9:30 of an evening.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband and I, when we've got him with us, he's got his special mat to sit on, et cetera, and he'll just go off into a deep sleep. And the other night, we had him on the weekend, and the other night he actually... It was quite funny. We were in hysterics. Woof, 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 woof. Dead to the world. Woof, woof. And he would get, one of the back legs would be, going and, and this probably went on for about 4 or 5 minutes. And we just thought it was hilarious. And I did say to my daughter, we've experienced Gus having a dream, we think. And I said, next time Pet Chat's on, I'm going to give a call and see what the vets have to say.
I'm glad you thought of us, Paula. Thank you. well, let's just backtrack a little before we can answer the question, do pets dream? So when you see your pet and they're in a sleep state and they start to show those movement behaviours and sometimes, as you said, vocalise, so they're going through a cycle of sleep known as rapid eye movement sleep or REM sleep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so we believe that their sleep patterns are very similar. But what happens, I think one of the differences with dogs is that they actually do have, there's three phases of sleep, light sleep, deep sleep, and REM sleep.
Yes.
And, they have shorter cycles where they can actually, they'll be more responsive to an outside stimuli. And that's when that's light sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But REM sleep is a time when there is activation of nerve pathways, such as movement. And, if you're able to look at their eyes without waking them up, literally rapid eye movement is what happens. Now, the question is, does that mean they're dreaming? So, first of all, in REM sleep, it's disconnected from consciousness.
Yes.
Okay, so obviously that's why they're not walking around or anything or interacting.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they'd just be awake.
Of course.
But do they dream? And I think that's probably something we just really don't know. They certainly exhibit many of the features of sleep patterns that humans have, and we know that REM sleep is the period of time that people experience dream state. And so while you're observing your Gus and he's there giving his little yips and yaps and his feet are moving. I just wonder in the middle of the night if Gus is laughing when you guys have REM sleep.
Yeah.
And he might be watching going, well, they're making funny noises and flicking their legs and things like that. So it is a similar sleep state, whether there's a dream or not. We like to think there is, they're chasing the birds or whatever it is.
Well, yes. Yes,
so I think they do.
Well, it sounded like us.
Yeah.
For us, that sounded like that where, as you say, the different stages of the light sleep, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, we know for sure that happens.
Yes,
I do. I want to believe that they do dream.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you. I think Dr. David Tabrett's answered your question there. We think so, but we don't know.
No, I don't think we'll ever be able to prove that of thing.
Unless we're a dog doctor, like an actual dog.
I am a dog doctor.
No, but you're not a dog. And dogs would know.
Dr. Dog.
That's right.
Okay.
There you go.
I'm getting confused, Amanda.
As long as it's not a nightmare.
That's right.
All right, we've got Rod from Spears Point on the phone. Hi, Rod.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. You've got difficulty getting eardrops in your beagle's ears.
Yeah, beagle ear ears, yeah.
How old's your beagle, Rod?
It's a beagle ear, mate.
Beagle ear.
Oh, beagle ear, yes.
Yeah, he's six.
6 years old, righto.
Yeah. And he's prone to ear infections.
So he's had them before?
Yeah, and I've got, every time he sees the eardrop bottle I've got from the vet come out, he just does a boulder. And I've seen advertise some probiotic powder you put on their food that's supposed to be good for hearing, like preventing ear infections and ear smell and that, and I didn't know whether that'll work or not.
Well, it won't change his behaviour when he sees the bottle come out.
No, but I mean, like, you put it on his food.
To reduce the risk of ear problems?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps, but I got to identify a few things, first of all. So breed-wise, a beagle ear, cross between a Cavalier Spaniel and a beagle, both of those breeds are known for ear disease. So you've kind of rolled the dice and landed with double six on that one, and that's the wrong end of the scale. But the other thing, and that's why I asked about whether your dog had had these problems before, because the more chronic that we get ear problems, the more damage that occurs to the tissue in the ear. And it just feeds on itself. So you get a ear disease event, ear infection, and it's treated, but every time this keeps coming back, and remembering we've got these predisposing factors. So every time it keeps coming back, it just causes a little bit more thickening in the ear canal, in the tissue, which narrows the ear canal. And when you have a narrow ear canal, then you get less air movement, less ventilation, build up of moisture. The moisture allows yeast to culture down in the ear, and the yeast then allows bacteria to get in there. So you get this vicious cycle with chronic problems. Now, the other thing about ears and ear disease in particular is it's extremely painful.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know a lot of dogs I've treated over the years. One of the key things, sometimes we can't get near them the first time we see them. And in those dogs, we may do one of two things. The first is we put them on oral antibiotics and anti-inflammatories for a period of time. Just to try and get it under control a little bit, and then come back and we need to get some topical treatment in there.
Yep.
But the other thing we sometimes do is I've anaesthetised dogs to flush their ears because they're so bad.
Yeah, well, he's like that now. Like, every time I take him to the vet now, he's been to the vet a few times and got treatment for it. And now when I take him to the vet, he plays up, he won't go in, and, he knows.
So that's,
looking their ears.
That's where we get to the next part, is how to address this. So just making sure that the medical side is we're on the right treatment. If it is getting continual and it's out of control, then talk to the vet about longer treatment cycles, but also consider whether you do need to refer, get a referral to go see a dermatologist. Because they deal with skin disease, ear disease is their forte. But the second thing is, for treatment, we want to use a classical conditioning behavioural approach. So I would be using food treats, his favourite food treat of all. And even if it's the first day, is you get him to sit for the food treat and you just put the bottle on the bench next to you.
Yeah.
And if he sits and stays, that's fine. And then gradually have the bottle next to him in your hand when you give him the treat. And then have the bottle next to his face and you're giving the treat, assuming this is all okay. And then the next thing is have the bottle and put it on top of his ear. We still haven't put anything in his ear.
Yeah.
And he's okay. And then lift the ear And again, don't put the medication in, but just have the bottle there so that gradually you get him towards this point where, oh, when the eardrops come out, that's when I get food, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. But as I said before, the medication is also designed to reduce the pain so he's not having a painful response.
Yep. Okay.
So it takes a bit of work. That's the
big
crux of it.
Yeah, right. A couple of weeks ago I talked about ear problems, and at this time of the year with a lot of humidity, it really does upset the dog's ears because there's so much moisture around. So the fact that we're coming into autumn could slow things down a bit. But one of the most important things is not to give up on putting that medication in the ears, because we need to really treat it. And even when you think it's fine, go back to your vet and just get them to double check, because if they do a swab of the ear, they can tell whether there's anything still residual there, and you might have to go a little bit longer, because sometimes people stop because they think the ears have improved, and you really can't afford to do that with ears, because you can't see what's going on deep down, whereas your vet can. The other thing is, if you are struggling, some of your vets, if you prop up, the nurses will put the eardrops in for you, or some of your groomers will do that as well, because it can be very difficult, because owners don't normally know how to put those eardrops in properly. Mm-hmm. And often I see dogs that their ears, the hair on their ears is covered with the solution that's supposed to be going in the ear. So they arrive with really greasy ears because the owner isn't able to get those drops into the ear canal. So that's sort of another thing I was just thinking there.
Yeah, that's happened to me a few times trying to get him in, all on the outside of his ear, and then he does a bolter and that.
Yeah, yeah. They can be so incredibly sore. You look at those poor little dogs and they'll have their head
head over.
Yeah, it's really quite something sore.
You're not alone, Rod. I've had a dog with ear problems and struggled myself at home. My wife's an ex-vet nurse, and sometimes we've even struggled with ear medication. But careful, take time, and as Cheryl just said, talk to your vet. Maybe one of the nurses can also help out with the treatments.
Good luck with that, Rod. Okay, next on the line we've got Anne from North Rothbury. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
G'day, Anne. Now, you're concerned about Cushing's disease.
Yeah, look, I had a dog 12 years ago, pardon me, that had it, and look, I know there's no cure for it. He only lasted a couple of months after it was diagnosed. But again, in those days, it took us 2 years to find out what it was, because the symptoms, can always be leading to something else. But I have a miniature schnauzer who is almost 8 years old, so he's still quite young. And we did a blood test the other day at the vet. The indicators are indicating Cushing's. So we've got the next blood test coming up next week where they do that injection and then measure the cortisol level. So I kind of know all about it. Now, I don't know these days if the medication is still in liquid form and how expensive it is, being on a pension, of course, and if there may be a natural remedy, or how do we help the poor dog?
look, it's fairly prevalent. It's kind of almost coincidental. I was speaking to a friend at the dog park the other day who has two miniature schnauzers, and one of them has just been diagnosed with Cushing's, like literally in the last week. But we do know there's quite a lot of different breeds that can develop Cushing's disease. So just very quickly, it's one of my favourite diseases, if I can say that.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm sorry. It is. It's named after the Cushing's disease is actually the human condition, but we call it that because it's just easy.
Right.
The proper name is hyperadrenocorticism. And there's two forms of it. Okay. So this goes to your question about cure and about treatment and so on.
Yeah.
Two forms. One is what we call a pituitary dependent. Now, the pituitary gland sits in the brain just under the hypothalamus. And it's just basically releasing hormones that stimulate the adrenal gland to pump out cortisol, okay? And it's basically in pituitary-dependent disease, it's not responsive to a normal feedback loop, okay? So the problem's in the brain. The other type that we see is adrenal hyperadrenocorticism. So the adrenal glands sit next to the renals, which are the kidneys, and so there's one on each side, and this is caused by an adrenal tumour. Now, generally, that is one-sided, okay? And generally, very generally, adrenal disease cause is generally in larger dogs, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So if I see, say, I don't know, just a big dog with it, I'm going to think it's more likely to be just looking from the outside adrenal disease. Now, the thing is, with adrenal disease, we do treat it similarly, but there is the possibility of surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remove it, they've still got one adrenal gland, then, you know, they're cured. So pituitary disease is in the brain.
Yeah.
So it's a bit harder to get to. There, now, there is a neurosurgeon in Sydney who's actually the world expert
in
removing these pituitary tumours in dogs.
Right.
It's not something everybody goes to because obviously we have – it's quite expensive and, you know, there's risks involved. But we also have good treatment. So the treatment in the past, yes, was different. There were different treatments. Nowadays, probably the last 20 years at least, I'm going to say, we use a product or a drug called trilastine. And what it does is it stops the conversion of cortisol in the tissue into an active form.
My other dog was on.
Yeah. It's still the best treatment.
Right.
In regards to natural remedy, the disease is caused by circulating cortisol in the body that is not responding to a feedback loop. So I can't think of anything that is, you know, going to address that.
Yeah.
You may be able to address some of the symptoms, but to be honest, the treatment that we use, the trilastine, is the best way to address the symptoms.
I just might add to in July, August last year, he had to have bladder stone surgery.
Well, he's a schnauzer.
Oh, yeah.
Miniature schnauzer. They get those.
Well, don't tell me the other one's going to get it.
Okay.
But I read the other day, but I did read the other day that Cushing's can also cause that.
Yes.
I don't know if that's true or not.
Yes, it's been a while since I've seen one. You can you get an increased risk of urinary tract infection.
Right, because he's on that Royal Canin urinary tract for life now.
Yeah, following the schnauzer.
Yeah.
So when we talk bladder stones, there's actually different types of minerals that can come together and cause those stones.
Right.
And so if you have infectious bladder stones, they're usually, again, very general, what we call a struvite, which is a magnesium triple phosphate mixture.
Right, yep.
And then with other diseases, like, for instance, Dalmatians get uric acid bladder stones.
Right.
Schnauzers, I'm going to guess cysteine, I think, is the disease that they get. I could be wrong on that. So,
okay,
so there is, you know, they're not all the same. But I'm glad he's in good hands with you, Anne, and I'm sorry that Cushing's is my favourite disease. I think bladder stones was my second favourite.
I might just keep ringing and annoying you.
Thanks for your call, Anne.
Thank you.
Good luck with it all. Cheryl, you were talking about folds in dogs.
I was.
And dermatitis.
Yes. Now, look, a lot of breeds have these folds on their face. Do you remember years ago there used to be an ad on television with a Shar Pei puppies?
The roly poly dogs.
Mm-hmm. And that ad actually made a lot of Shar Peis be sold. You know, people wanted that roly poly dog. But the Shar Peis get a lot of problems with their skin, particularly with those folds. Now, they're not the only breed of dogs that get it. You know, you've got your bulldogs, any dog that's got a squished in face, our brachycephalic dogs. But a lot of dogs with really short hair have those rolls, so you'll find that in your bulldogs, things like that. Now, these foals and rolls are rewarding
for
pugs.
Cavaliers.
Yes.
And cats.
And cats do too.
Persian cats.
Persians in particular.
Himalayans.
Yes. Now, we need to make sure that we are cleaning these folds out. The problem is with the foals, they collect dander, so as the skin and the cells are shedding, the dander starts to collect in these folds, along with hair that sheds and dirt. Even some food gets in these crevices. And what happens? If they become moist, we then have another problem. So that moisture starts to breed or the bacteria and yeast come along and everything festers in there. Then we get odour. You can smell these dogs' faces. They really do smell. So what we need to do is make sure that we're paying particular attention to cleaning. It's not just about having a bath and drying the dog. It's also about cleaning out these folds really well. There's heaps of products on the market for it. You can go to your vet and pick up something, but it's so important to get them clean and dry, because moisture is the big problem here. So if we allow moisture into these folds, it can then develop into a really bad dermatitis. Mm. And that's a big issue, isn't it, David?
Terrible. Even if you're just bathing your dog and they're one of these brachycephalic breeds, that's not going to get in there.
No.
I often find the ones I've treated, we have to use a cotton bud dipped into the skin cleaning solution and to be able to explore that. But as you said, it's getting them dry.
Yeah.
So a lot of those skin fold cleaning solutions have a high alcohol content because it will actually dry out very quickly.
Yep.
The problem is if the skin is actually irritated before you start, it's going to make it worse.
Yep. And so this is what you've got to look at. If you've got any redness, if there's anything there that you're just not, you know, you think, well, that's very red and that's very smelly, or there's even pus around, you need to go to the vet, because they're going to give you something that's going to be a lot better to treat that area with. And sometimes these can become so bad that it will spread further and further, not just stay in that little crease or the fold, it will go further. There's another thing that can sometimes happen with some of these dogs as well, like Cocker Spaniels. They'll get these folds not just in their furrows like we've got in our bulldog, but they'll get skin folds around their lips where their lips and their jowls sort of hang down. So that's another area. If you're noticing that your dog has got odour and you're not sure, you know, if you've given the dog a bath and everything's fine and you're going, the dog smells a bit funny, really check out these fold areas and, you know, get a Q-tip. Go in and just sort of feel what's there and have a look at that Q-tip. If it's really dirty, you need to start cleaning it. You need to shed out all of that muck that's sitting in there. One of the other things is there's some dogs that have like their tail is more like a corkscrew, and you look at the base of the tail and they've got these little folds or rolls around there. That's another area that you need to be mindful of. And overweight female dogs, they'll often get the folds around their vulva and they need to be cleaned. So making sure that any fold on your dog is being attended to. It's not just about bathing and drying.
Now, if you do all that, though,
yes,
Cheryl, and because those folds are there all the time,
mm-hmm,
these problems can recur.
Oh, yes.
And so it is actually a lifelong maintenance issue. And I have seen some of these dogs, I'm not sure I've seen cats with this, but dogs have had to have surgery to remove some of the excess folds.
Yeah.
So I've done surgery in the past on dogs with nasal fold dermatitis, like we started talking, also the vulval fold. I haven't done any tail ones, but I find they're particularly nasty.
Yes.
And they can actually get fistula, which are infections that burrow into the skin. And they form tunnels under the skin up along the spine. So it's something that as a dog owner, if you do have a pet that is prone to these problems, you do have to be attentive and continuously maintaining those folds, keeping them clean, keeping them dry.
Yeah, and this is the thing. I'm actually a companion animal hygienist and my area is skin. I mean, you know, if we can bath and clean a dog, you can prevent a lot of skin diseases by maintaining not just, you know, the skin that's flat that you see, but those folds, really getting in and keeping a maintenance program, making sure there's nothing going on that skin.
Great. Good advice. And we've got Maury from Metford looking for some advice. Hi, are you there?
Yes, I'm on the line.
G'day, Maury.
Hope you're having a good day. Look, I heard you talking about schnauzers there a little while ago.
Yes.
I've got a miniature schnauzer, female, and she seems to have a continual problem with licking around her urinary area.
Yep.
Every time she urinates, it's lick, lick, lick for, you know.
How many, do you only have the one dog?
I only have the one, yes.
And how old is she?
Four,
okay. It's not unusual for dogs, but being a vet, I'm always going to be on the lookout for, is there something going on? Because obviously we don't want to miss problems. And a couple of things, I saw your note come up on the screen. I was just jotting down what I think could be happening. So certainly behavioural response, which could be excessive or it could be normal. You could probably, you know, make that decision if it is a behavioural response, and it's obviously enough to cause you to call in. So it probably could be a bit obsessive. But there are some other reasons that can cause this. Now, as Cheryl was just describing, we can get skin infections around the back end that are going to cause irritation and continual itching. One of the things about infection with the skin is that pruritus or itchiness can be a symptom of that. Okay, so that's one thing. And of course, if there is an infection and once the urine kind of comes out, if it spills onto the skin, it could be irritating that area. So yeah, that's a possibility.
I had it to the vet a while back, mm-hmm. and he said she didn't have a urinary infection. He seemed to think it had something to do with the anal glands, but the way she sort of, on the area she licks, I don't think it's that.
But, well, she may not be able to reach right around. That's a possibility, yeah.
You often find with the anal glands that the dog will lick its feet and they do lick their groin, but really the flank area rather than underneath.
No, that's right. Yeah. Because the pain is up higher.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing that sometimes can develop when they get into that habit of licking around that area, often they can get yeast there, like Malassezia can form, and that can be an irritant to them as well.
Yeah. Right. Do you bath her in any particular product?
No, just you know, pet wash.
Yeah.
But I have started giving her a bit of a localised wash with warm salt water.
That's not a bad option. Again, you do have to make sure you dry thoroughly. The other thing to consider would be using a medicated shampoo that could take care of any yeast there, like Meliseb is an example. And it's really good for those sort of things. And the important thing is if you do use a medicated shampoo, you have to leave it on the skin for about 10 minutes, then wash it off thoroughly and then dry thoroughly. Worth keeping in touch with your vet about this problem. I was just, again, being a miniature schnauzer, thinking about things like, as you've already said, they've ruled out a urinary tract infection, but also being alert to the risk of diabetes, for instance, because that means her urine would become sweet and sugary. So the actual description, diabetes mellitus, which is the name for sugar diabetes, is actually derived from, because it's, I think it's Latin for sweet urine, and sweet excess urine, and first described after people actually tasted the urine. So there you go. So it's probably a number of things to be on the lookout for, but certainly looking after the skin in that area with a medicated shampoo may get this back under control. And I'd be keen to hear if you do that. Let us know how you get on, because obviously if it responds, then you've solved the problem.
Yeah. The other sort of thing with the two, she'll be lying down, you know, not licking or anything. She'll be lying down, sort of going off to sleep. Next thing, she'll jump up and go around the circle and start licking. As if something has bitten her.
That's when I start to think of dermatitis. Mm. That's a symptom of, because the skin just suddenly gets itchy and sore. And so that's when, you start worrying about yeast infections and so on. So,
yeah, Maliseb. Yep,
I'll be using Maliseb on her. All right?
Maliseb, is it?
Yep. If you drop into a pet store or a vet, you'll be able to find it. It's a very common product that we use all the time.
Okay, good luck, Maury. All the best. You're listening to Pet Chat on 2NURFM. And congratulations to Anne from North Rothbury. You've won that $50 pet food voucher and we'll be in touch about that. And in the meantime, we are going to have a look at Pet of the Week for 2NURFM. If you go to our 2NURFM webpage at 2NURFM.com.au and click on the lifestyle section, you'll find Pet Chat and our Pet of the Week. And we've got June and Shadow.
June and Shadow, they're photos. Do They're very attractive, let me just say.
They are.
As pets. I think cute. One at a time. Okay. One at a time.
We'll start with June.
Start with June.
All right. You going or am I going?
No, you're good. You're good.
June is a stunning black and white short hair cat. Her coat is mostly white with a crown-like patch of black on her head. She's a gentle soul who's looking for a place where she can feel safe and secure. She's quite shy at first, but with time you'll find she's full of love. She's calm and sweet, and she values quiet moments of connection and bringing warmth and joy into your life.
I think June might sit on your lap.
Oh, she's
and
beautiful.
And just be happy.
She's a beautiful cat.
Yes,
yeah.
Very gentle.
Very gentle. It said she'll be fine with kids. She would be suitable to a home where she is only the only pet. However, she is cat friendly but hasn't met a dog yet. So not too sure about that. Also, if you're wanting to meet June, she's currently at Pet Quarters Broadmeadow with her sister May, who was featured last week on Pet Chat. So you can check out both of those cats.
I think June's going to find a home pretty soon.
Mm. Yeah, she's cute.
You might want June and May. You never know.
As long as we don't get July, I think we'll be fine.
All right, next dear. We've got Shadow.
Well, Shadow, on the other hand, a 7-month-old dingo cross, very cheeky and adventurous. And Buddy will melt your heart, as they do. He's thrilled to see people, his people, and we'll let you know that. So he'll be right up against you. He doesn't mind being with another dog for company. He really does need to probably have another dog around. He's wants to continue, though, with an experienced owner for his socialisation and training. Toilet trained, of course, and he's started on lead training. Just got to make sure you've got a good fence, particularly a high fence, 1.8 metres, so 6 feet, just to make sure he's got enough space to exercise safely. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, he's very cute, and if you want to check him out, you can go to our website at 2nurfm.com.au. Now, we've got about a minute and a half left. Is there anything you would like to discuss?
Well, I did wanted to talk about quickly a topic, and I didn't get a chance to in the first show of the year because obviously our listeners ring in with all their problems. As of today, it's been fantastic. But there has been in the news recently and over the last year talk about outbreaks of avian influenza or bird flu in Australia. Now, the disease was first detected much earlier last year, and this crops up from time to time. You might have seen news about it happening in the US, where it's caused a great deal of havoc on their poultry population. The strain of the virus in the US is different to the strain in Australia, but nevertheless, our control measures to stop it spreading does involve that we do have to cull poultry. And people say, well, hang on, what's going on? Two things. One is, if it gets into the native population, we're very, very worried about that. First of all, because it will decimate native bird populations, which then has a downstream effect, even on things like what sort of trees grow in our gardens and in our forests. The other thing is that wild birds fly around. Poultry, on the other hand, stay in one space, but they're crammed in a little bit closer than they're not spread out like wild birds. So we do have to have good control. So just keep an eye on the news. You'll see it coming up a bit more in the future.
Great. Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much. We'll catch up with you next week for Pet Chat on 2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.